download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, we're going to play The Worst, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. Our longtime friend and panelist, Kristen Toomey, will be here. Have some fun. We'll complain about the worst things for prizes. Prizes tonight look like they're going to be fun. We've got sweets and pizza, as it should be. That's coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. But right now, you know, there's been a lot made about the future of driverless technology. But the truth of the matter is that we might want to take the word future out of it because it's here. More and more private companies, including Tesla and Uber, have announced their intentions to move driverless technology, cars and trucks on the road, put them on the road in the short term. So instead of debating the merits or whining about the good old days, we should embrace it. And more importantly, plan for it. What do municipalities and governments need to do to prepare for an influx of autonomous vehicles? And what do we need to know as drivers who are going to share the road? The Metropolitan Planning Council is all over this as we continue our series, How to Improve Blank. Blank is transportation and driverless technology for tonight. And we welcome MPC's Director of Transportation, Audrey Wenink, to the program tonight. Audrey, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great. I mean, this is a great topic to talk about. Obviously, I've heard... It's funny because in my doctor's office, there was a Time magazine that said something to the effect of, you know, a driverless technology, will you drive, blah, blah, blah. And I recognize it's been sitting there for a long time. Like, I looked at the date, it was a long time. But it does seem to push us in this way that says, it's in the future, it's the future, it's the future, but the future is now.
Right. There's a lot of hype about autonomous vehicles. There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of expectations. But I don't think we want to pin all our hopes on them that they're going to solve all of our transportation problems.
Yeah, right. Let's start there. I mean, the goal is it's mainly a private sector project to put driverless technology on the roads. This helps for trucks and for cars and limits the amount of money that needs to be put into workforce and things of that nature. But this is coming from companies that want to push this technology and put it on the roads.
Sure. I mean, automotive manufacturers, Ford, GM, Tesla, they're all integrating this into their vehicle design. And these cars they're out there right now. Some cars that you don't have to even touch the steering wheel. You just have to be attentive to take control back if something goes wrong. And then there's a lot of features like automatic braking and automated parking and things like that. So some of those features are out there already.
Right, right. And when I talk about autonomous vehicles and even driverless technology, I mean, what comes to mind is the idea that the cars that we see right here in our showcase studio right now that are whizzing by on Michigan Avenue, they'll be without a human being at the helm. Is that the pure way to understand driverless technology?
Well, there's five levels of autonomous vehicles as defined by the federal government. And so, you know, levels one and two, people are in the car, three people are in the car and have less and less of a role. Only level five has nobody in the car and it's not built from the ground up to never have anyone ever use it. That's the goal ultimately to make transportation less expensive and reduce the labor costs and make transportation kind of foolproof, you know, safe, like can't get into accidents. And that is a potential really big benefit. Safety is a huge problem with transportation right now. But there's pros and cons.
Well, let's get into the municipality side of this, because for us to get to a level four, or a level five, or even a three, and, you know, when you talk about autonomous vehicles, let's talk about regulation, because I would assume that the minute that there would be any car from the private sector that would be on the road in any of those levels, it would have to go through City Hall. It'd have to get sign off from if not the city government, the state government, the federal government. Is that not the case?
Yeah, right now, it depends what state you're in. But right now, I mean, the city doesn't have any policies about autonomous vehicles. Some cities have established policy frameworks, like Portland, Oregon has established its Safe Autonomous Vehicles Initiative, where they're actually permitting and partnering with the vehicle manufacturers to test them so that they get the data and they're kind of understanding what is happening in the testing arena. Arizona is letting it be kind of a free-for-all, so it's varying.
Interesting. But
in Chicago, there is not a policy framework established yet.
Well, we were kind of talking about it when we were setting the segment up, but the concept of two ways to kind of go about driverless technology. One being let the private sector have at the roads, do whatever they can, and they want to do this. That's, you know, without regulation, to come in and essentially get these products into the hands of consumers. But the other is to tell those manufacturers, yes, there's going to be a place for driverless technology in the city, but this is what we expect. This is what we want. This is what kind of city that you're working in. There needs to be, there needs to be compliance.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, as you see, I mean, right there, you just mentioned Portland and Arizona. They're both taking two different approaches to the same topic.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to step back and realize vehicles are part of the transportation system. They're only one part of it. Transit is huge in this region. There are 2 million people a day that ride transit in the Chicago region. When you look at the roads, and we're here in the studio and we're looking out on Michigan Avenue, and, you know, the road, Michigan Avenue, has tons of buses. It has 100 buses an hour that run on it. There's sidewalks. There's bicycles going down the street. So our quote-unquote right-of-way, our streets serve many functions. And so we need to respect that in a very complex city like this and determine what's good for the city. And what do we want? We want active, healthy citizens. We want clean air, so we want environmentally friendly transportation. We want safe transportation. The city put out a Vision Zero plan. We don't want people dying in car crashes, so that is a benefit of autonomous vehicles. We want economic opportunity. So we want all these good things, and we need to figure out how can autonomous vehicles provide those benefits and not provide negatives that we could avoid.
It's so interesting to me because a lot of this has to do with what eventually would be machine learning. And, you know, because I was thinking about it in my head, but, you know, if you've ever been Friday afternoon or evening on a road like Western or Ashland in the city of Chicago, a two-lane, four-lane highway, but at the same time a bus is there or someone double parks to jump into a place, and everyone has to veer to the left or start to essentially improvise. What happens when the machine has to be in that situation? They're not going to improvise. They're going to stop, and there's going to be a lot of frustration around the fact that driving in Chicago or other big cities, as we know it, is an ebb and flow. It is making audibles and improvising in the moment, and sharing the road with machines that won't be able to do that, I could see being very frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a huge transition. There's going to be a long period where there will be some autonomous vehicles and there'll be other vehicles on the road. Most people own their cars an average of 10, 12 years. So there's going to be a huge transition period. There are a lot of things that are very hard for autonomous vehicles to learn, like how to deal with pedestrians and unpredictable movements. And there's a lot of etiquette that goes into driving that people don't think about. Like when you're crossing a street, you make eye contact with the driver. And I've read that it's very hard to figure out how to deal with these complex movements in urban intersections for vehicles to understand what people are going to do. And we really want to prioritize transportation for pedestrians and bikes. That's what we've done in the city in recent years. We've made priority, some priority bus lanes. We've got bike lanes. We are increasing pedestrian crosswalks. We want active, healthy people with good social interaction. And that's, you know, a good balanced transportation system. And so we don't want to have autonomous vehicles just sort of take over and have it become a city without people.
Right.
If you Google autonomous vehicle images, you're going to find most of the pictures have cars with little circles around them. And there are no pedestrians or bikes or people anywhere in the images. That's sort of this futuristic vision.
Yeah. So Audrey Wenink is in studio. She's the Metropolitan Planning Council's Director of Transportation. We're talking about, we do this time to time on the download, do our segment, How to Improve Blank. Tonight we're talking about transportation and autonomous vehicles and driverless technology. There's two parts of this. Obviously, how municipalities prepare for this when it comes to regulation and making sure the private sector works for them. But the other part, of course, we're talking about is safety and what is going to happen when autonomous vehicles and robots are essentially driving, next to you on Lower Wacker Drive. All right, so let's go back to the regulation part because, and I know this is not popular right now because regulation, especially with the administration that's in Washington, that's a bad word, regulation. But is there a way to think about it? And I know these private companies are lobbied up and they're not the kind of companies that are going to say, yes, this sounds like a great idea. But is there a way to regulate this so that there can be financial opportunity for taxpayers that this technology is coming onto the roads, meaning taxes, policies around, fees, what's happening essentially with rideshares?
Yeah, well, rideshare was a great example of wanting to establish policies that are good for society. So rideshare came into the region. It wasn't really well regulated. The number of cars got very, very high, and we've seen a lot of increased congestion. There's been some studies about that. And we also have seen diversion from transit. And transit is really important to this region. It's a real priority. We can't function without transit. And they, took some of the money from rideshare and put it towards transit maintenance, which we need a lot of funding for transit. You've probably heard about all the fare increases.
Right.
There's some real, we're living in the moment today, and we need to maintain the system that we have as well as thinking about the future.
But that to me, I know that that there's those companies that are investing in this technology. They're not going to be like, yeah, I think there should be a surcharge on top of this.
No.
They're just not going to do that. But is that something that, as municipalities look at their budgets and their bottom lines and everything is tight, can it possibly be a revenue source as well?
Well, the cities manage the right-of-way. The cities operate the streets. And the state DOTs manage the highways. And so I think what is more likely is establishing – at least early, a permitting process where you're doing some kind of testing and permitting. You could charge for permitting and allow a company to do some type of pilot. And then you require them to give you the data from the pilot. And so then you're kind of learning together and making sure that what you're doing is working for the region.
When we talk about driverless technology, a lot of it, might be the big trucks that hit the expressways and the interstates in this country to essentially, make the labor force inexpensive for those companies. But when we talk about consumers who might be able to use this instead of what they do now, whether they're taking the metro or possibly mass transit in the city, they might jump in an Uber or rideshare in that case. Who is this directly competing with? Who's at risk of losing ridership and opportunity and cost? Is it the metro train? Is it the CTA train? Who stands to lose from autonomous vehicles hitting the streets of Chicago?
Well, autonomous vehicles, they do have the potential to siphon off some ridership from transit, but there's definitely a limit because cars are cars. If you look at a road full of cars, and then you look at a road full of autonomous cars, the same.
Right.
And so there's only so much space in the roads. So that you're going to hit capacity. Maybe you're going to be able to fit 20% more cars in the road. They're going to be able to go, 2 inches apart, and you won't have as many weaving patterns and such. So you maybe can fit a few more, but there's no way you're going to have everyone change to being in a car. I mean, Metra has calculated that if you shut down Metra, you would need to build 27 lanes of roadway to accommodate all the people that are. I mean, so our city transit's not going anywhere.
Right.
Our city is built on transit. Autonomous vehicles will provide another option, but it's also very important that we don't allow them to become a very elite option and have even more social division and be only for the rich people.
Right. Equity. I could see that. I was going to ask the same question about whether or not this is just going to be a new version of automatic or stick shift. is it going to be automatic or autonomous? That what's going to happen with when you go to a car dealer? You say, I'll take the driverless technology over, the ability to drive.
I think everything's going to migrate to autonomous. You'll hear from Lyft and Uber that pretty soon on your app, you'll be able to pick not only, Lyft line or Uber pool, but you'll be able to pick Uber autonomous. You'll get like choices and you'll know what you're choosing at least when they enter the market like that. But the Metropolitan Planning Council is very concerned about equity. It's a big focus. We're a nonprofit and we think about the region as a whole. Equity is one of our major emphasis areas. And, you know, we're very concerned that autonomous vehicles and any transportation solution increase equity and increase access for people and not only increase it for a few people and make it worse for everybody else.
Well, I mean, yeah. as we look at Michigan Avenue as a test study, as we see the buses go flying by here as we're having this conversation, we also see a lot of taxis. We see ride shares up and down here. I mean, there has to be some question about workforce and what this means for people having jobs in the transportation industry with this kind of technology here and ready to be implemented.
Right. I'll use the overused word of disruptor, right? This is a very big disruption. This is not only a major, autonomous vehicles will not only majorly impact transportation, but will impact the insurance industry, will impact, you know, any driver, will impact a full range of areas. And there's a very large amount of concern about all the employment. I mean, Lyft and Uber have made a big deal about creating a lot of jobs, but within a few years, they hope to be autonomous and all those jobs would go away. In terms of transit, there is the possibility that transit workers could shift to more of a customer service orientation where they wouldn't be operating the vehicles, but they would be staffing the transit system in a different way. So I think we need to be open-minded and flexible and think about transportation as a service and how do we continue to make it work better for people, and employment is certainly part of the picture.
My last question to you is just as the city and the state and the federal government has always been at the forefront of infrastructure when it comes to transportation, whether it be building the L or metro or even doing refurbishing or renovations, should they be in this game? Should the city of Chicago be looking at buying autonomous vehicles and finding a way to get involved in this technology that's about to hit the streets?
I think it's a little early to say that, you know, a large public investment in owning vehicles is the right thing to do right now. But a lot of urban planners believe that the best scenario is that autonomous vehicles be a shared fleet and not privately owned. So a shared fleet and electric so that they're very efficient and autonomous. That way you'd have ultimately fewer vehicles because everyone would be sharing them. There'd be less parking. All that parking could be used for public space. So those are the positives that some people see.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Now we're on to something, right? The autonomous car of the month. Audrey Wenink is the Metropolitan Planning Council's Director of Transportation in tonight talking about autonomous vehicles and driverless technology, the world that is right at our doorstep. Audrey, thanks for joining us tonight. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.